Welcome to the Self-Storage Playbook Podcast. In this show, we're going to take you behind the scenes with fellow self-storage investors from around the country and look inside their operations to talk about their victories, lessons learned, and the current strategies they're using in today's market to dominate this fast-growing field. I'm your host, Terry Royce. Let's go. In this episode, I'll be talking with Ken Holmes, an experienced single-family real estate investor who has pivoted towards self-storage over the last few years. To date, Ken owns and remotely manages over 90,000 square feet of self-storage in multiple states and recently sold one of his properties for double the initial investment. Ken has a bunch of value bombs he drops in this episode, so let's get started. Hey everyone, keep in mind, if you have a storage deal that doesn't fit your buy criteria, or you need help with a storage deal that's come across your path, I'm always happy to take a look as we are actively looking to buy more storage properties around the U.S. Shoot me an email at selfstorageplaybook@gmail.com to connect. And don't forget to connect with our Facebook group and help continue the conversation at www.selfstorageplaybook.com. Thanks, guys. First off, I want to say thank you for taking some time to join me, man. I've known you for, I think, 4 years now, and you've had a big impact on my real estate journey and now my self-storage journey. And I know how much value you've given me. And that's why I was excited to talk with you about storage and share your message and kind of your journey with some other people. I mean, you're absolutely, I mean, in my words, I think a lot of people would say this, you're killing it. You know, when I typed up your brief bio for the show, I forgot about two of the facilities you owned. I mean, you're up to, I think 90,000 square feet now, not 60,000 square feet in less than 2 years. And you've already flipped one of those. But before all the self-storage success, you were doing a lot of regular real estate flips and stuff like that. So kind of take us back and tell us a little bit about how you got from there to here in the transition and kind of what drew you to storage.
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to be on here with you, Terry. I've been in real estate all my business life. You know, I started out as a residential real estate appraiser and moved on into owning some rentals, and then eventually, and this is, you know, a million years ago before the internet, but I met a guy in town who had some books and tape cassette courses by John Schaub, and there was a little flyer in there, and so I signed up to go to Vegas for 3 days and take my first seminar with John Schaub, $395, which is highway robbery. You know, nothing's really been the same since then. Just to be in a room with people that had it going on, seeing people that were flipping houses, and, you know, they looked like regular people. They didn't look any smarter than anybody else. And so that really is what kind of got me to feel like it was possible to not just have a job, but to move on and get going and have your own thing. And I remember I bought a duplex to live in. I lived in one side and rented out the other side. I was getting $450 for the other side. I had a roommate paying me $225, and my entire payment PITI was $750, and I was getting all the tax benefits. And I lived there for like 2 years and sold it for $30,000 more. And at the time, I was only making $30,000 a year. And between that and the John Schaub seminar, I was like, okay, the money is in owning and controlling real estate. It's not in working. So I've just been on a journey ever since then, learning and carrying on. I've done everything, but more than anything, I've done real estate flips. I mean, since, you know, the late 1980s all the way up till, you know, I finished one this year. I've been doing that pretty steady. But for the past few years, I've been looking for something to replace that, to provide me income, and but to be, you know, easier, for lack of a better word, less work, and not as much of a treadmill. So I wanted both income now, but I also wanted to build residual at the same time. And running into Mike Wagner through Life and Air and him being in our group and everything, I really hadn't thought about self-storage before as something that I might do. I knew one guy that owned one, and he was complaining about, you know, he had 200 tenants and he was always down there, and it just never seemed like something I would be interested in. But there were several of us talking about it, and Mike was going on, and this went on for 3 or 4 calls. It just dawned on me one day, you know, the more Mike talked, I was like, this is it. This is what I'm looking for. what I like about there's really two things that I like about storage more than anything. And the first one is you can go to systems very quickly. You know, in my mind, once you find the storage facility and vetted it and done your due diligence and you feel like it's a good deal and you're getting ready to close, you've got anywhere from 60 to 100 days of work. And then it kind of goes on autopilot. The way we're running them in my system, I don't really have an active role in day-to-day operations. I almost never talk to a tenant. I've never rented a unit ever in my life. I guess I could, but I've never done it. I've got team to answer the phone. I've got people local that are going to help me with repairs or anything that's needed. I've got a team that collects the money. I've got a team that bookkeeps. There's just the only thing I really do is watch the marketing. And so if it's working, I need to leave it alone. And so there's really nothing left for me to do. And I've owned plenty of businesses. And I have attempted to get to that level of systemization in many of them. Never have owned anything where I started off the bat with no daily role. And so my only role is to find a deal, get it fixed up, and then turn on the systems. And so that was the number one thing that attracted me, because I get tired of stuff, whether I was doing development or doing flips or whatever. It's exciting at first, and after a while, I'm tired of it. And so with this, I can get excited about a deal, get it all funded, get it bought, make all the repairs and everything, and then I can kind of walk away. I don't have to worry about being tired of it later on, because I'm really not going to have to do that much. And the second thing that I like about storage is that, like I was saying a minute ago, it's a business and it's real estate. So it looks like real estate. It's taxed like real estate, which is good for us, but it's really a business. A business that, again, can be systemized, where you're subbing out all the work to other people. And we all know that business profits are better than real estate profits on the whole. It's much easier to do, or much quicker to do, a business turnaround. I mean, you know, there's the shows on TV, that guy, what's his name, that buys the profit guy or whatever. Yeah. And he goes in and buys a business, and he might have to dump 100 grand into it, get it turned around, get it systemized, and he's got $500,000 in it. Next thing you know, it's worth $1.5 million. Well, that's basically the same thing we're doing in the storage arena. And you're just not going to do that buying houses and duplexes and quads very well. You're not going to do that fast. And so I really like that part. So basically, I'm fixing a business, but I'm still getting depreciation, like real estate and all that. So it still has the tax advantages. Those are the two things I like most. But if I had to pick one, it's the systemization. I just want to get in, get it fixed, and basically leave.
Yeah, and I think commenting on that, or taking that back, if I remember correctly, our coaching group was kind of more and more talking about storage. I don't want to use the word skeptical, but there was a point I watched your mindset transition from, okay, I've got this 2-year or 5-year plan or whatever, to kind of fully leave single family and transition fully into storage. And that happened a lot quicker. So what happened? Walk us through what happened in your, like, and I know the systems you hit on that, but really, like, the shift that happened with you, that, and how you realized that.
So, you know, I had Mike Wagner helping me, which was a huge blessing. And so I started and bought the first one. There was a lot of luck in it. My first one was a really good deal, a better deal than I thought it was going to be. But I bought that deal mid-October of 2018. By the end of December, I was pretty much done with all the rehab work. We had to do some drainage work. We had to fix a bunch of doors. We had to put in a new gate system. You know, so I had to hire, you know, 5 or 6 different contractors to do a job. And then we were done. And so I kind of quit going down there. This was a 3-hour drive from my house. I went down there 2 or 3 times, getting all that worked out. And then I went home, and, you know, we had started marketing, and January, February, our numbers were good. March, our numbers were good. We were getting more move-ins than I had anticipated. And so, you know, it just dawned on me that I don't have anything to do. Everything's working. My only role is to monitor, you know, answer questions and to monitor the marketing. Well, our marketing is working. People are moving in. So what do I do all day? And so we were still doing rehab at that point. And so I expected to have to grind. I expected to have to spend a couple years doing both, grinding and all that. But it really wasn't. It wasn't a grind. In 90 days or whatever, I was done with all the work. So it was like I just did it for a little bit and quit. And I went back and kept on rehabbing houses and all that. And we bought another one. And again, there was, you know, a couple months. That one was even less work. We had very little work to do on that one. It was mostly the business fix and the systems fix. And so that one was probably a month, month and a half. And we had it running. And it started renting. And so I'm just sitting there going, wow, this is working. And I'm not having to work. And the more I did that, the more I saw that, the more I knew this is the future right here. Because I loved it. I mean, you know, if I had $30 million in the bank, I can still get excited about a real estate deal. I love real estate, but I like finding the deal, analyzing the deal, saying, hell yeah, this is a deal, figuring out how I'm going to finance it and fund it and, you know, what kind of partners I'm going to have on the deal with me. But like I said before, I get sick of it after a while. It doesn't matter what it is, I get sick of it. And so this is the perfect business for me. I like getting excited. And I like to work for a little bit. I don't like to work anymore. So I'm basically a lazy person that can get excited over a real estate deal. And so if you're a lazy person and you only want to work for a little bit and then you're kind of done, this is the perfect business. I mean, you could do two or three deals a year and it really wouldn't be that much work. And yet you can make a tremendous amount of money and cash flow from that. And I like that as well. If I had to, you know, having been in real estate since the late 80s, what do I like kind of the least? Chasing deals, talking to sellers, just the treadmill of in the, you know, house business, constantly having to get another deal, another deal, another deal, another deal. Where on this, I only need a couple a year. So that, it really lowers that. And I'm doing my best to systemize all that as well. But it lowers deal acquisition, and it won't be that long before I won't really need any more either, because the money is working out very well for us. So, yeah, that first deal was in Hinesville, and we closed on it again in October of 2018. And I went down there the last time in December of 2018, and I didn't go again till about 2 months ago. And the only reason I went 2 months ago is I was going to see another facility. Our friend Kevin was buying one about 30 minutes from my facility, and he had asked me to come take a look at it with him. And so I was going to drive right by it. I figured I might as well set an appointment with Terry that works for me down there and stop by and say, hey, but that's really all it was. There's nothing going on. It's interesting when you go to a self-storage facility and you just randomly go there, there's nobody there. It's just sitting there. What are you going to do? You know, there might be one person drive in and drop off some boxes or whatever, but on the whole, it's just sitting there by itself. You know, we don't use offices. I don't have my people generally go to the facility once or twice a week and not for the whole day. And so it's just a bunch of buildings sitting there behind a fence. There's no reason to go there.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, you know, kind of hitting on that. A lot of people that are trying to get into the business, and even some operators that don't have the right systems in place, it can really, once you're kind of in this business, you can see how some of these operators can get their properties into the situations they're in. But once those systems are in place, there's really not a lot to do. And I guess wonder with your mindset on that, you know, you did the first one in Tifton and then Hinesville. Was there part of you after the first one that was like, this one was just luck, the next one's going to be harder?
It definitely was. And, you know, and like I said, I couldn't, but we bought Hinesville first, then we bought Tifton. Tifton, again, was less work. There was hardly anything to fix. And so it's just running along. And I'm thinking the same thing. I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm at Vegas and I've won the first two hands. Somebody's waiting on me to push in all my chips before they take me out. And then I did have some problems at Tifton. I had somebody breaking in to units, and it went on for several months, unit after unit after unit. And the police, you know, they were trying to figure it out. And we did have some cameras, but we didn't have cameras where you could see every single building. And I thought, okay, here we go. But eventually, actually, the police, the detective, put up his own deer camera shining down between these two buildings and wound up catching the guy. And it was one of my tenants that was doing it. And so then we got that fixed, and that one went back to be, then I started liking it again, because that was a constant thorn in my side, you know, three or four times a month, some tenant irate and having to deal with the police and insurance, and or telling them they don't have insurance and feeling bad about it. But then when we got that fixed up, it went back to being really good again. And knock on wood, there really hasn't been major issues to deal with. I mean, I had last week we had a storm in Mississippi and my big sign blew down, and so I'm having to find somebody to put it back. Actually, we mounted a sign on an existing sign, and evidently some of the 6x6s were more rotten than they look. And so it blew down the storm, so I'm having to get that put up. But that's hardly a, and again, I'm not doing it. It's 8 hours from here. Melissa got me a couple bids. We decided which one we're going to do, and he's going to do it next, I think he's going to do it Saturday, but that's hardly work. I just talked to Melissa about it on the phone and tell her to find somebody, and she does. And I went through a little period where I started second guessing it, because it does seem a little too good to be true. But again, so far, so good. I think, you know, it's just like everything in real estate. If you're conservative going in, if you buy a good deal, you should be relatively safe. And like, compare it to the house business. If you've got a house under contract for, let's say, $100,000, it's worth $200,000, it needs, you know, $40,000 in repairs or whatever. At any point in that process, you can sell that to another rehabber and get out and not lose any money. You know, unless you're just really fixing the wrong stuff or whatever. But at any point, I mean, you're liquid from day one all the way through to the end. You can get all your money back. You should be fine on that deal. And that's the same thing on the storage. If you buy right, you're liquid on the day you close, or you could even wholesale it, and you're liquid all at any point, you can sell it. You know, I mean, I bought the one in Meridian, and it had, supposedly it had 40 out of 170 tenants there. But once I bought it, I realized that only four of those 40 did that part where they pay me. So I really only had four tenants. You know, you just kind of get the stuff going, get it started renting up. It's just not a lot of hard things to do. Again, I keep on knocking on wood here, but I haven't been down there. You know, we got the work done, we got it rented, and, you know, we were up 7 this month in Meridian.
Yeah, and save questions to the end, but there's somebody that had a question here that's, you know, kind of trails off that, why your property is so far away. And I think for people that haven't bought a storage facility or managed one, it might be hard to, a lot of people that get into the business came from the single family business, and having a rental halfway across the country sounds like an effing nightmare.
Right.
So kind of, you know, just wrapping that up with explain how with the out of state properties, the systems, you know, you kind of glossed over it with Aventari and having.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You know, I'm transitioning from one business to another. Why? Because I don't want to work that hard. I want to be able to create the same income and work less. So if I bought a storage facility that was within 30 minutes of me, we all know I'm going to drive down there all the time. Something's going to break. I'm going to feel compelled to go stare at it. And so if you buy a storage facility that's 8 hours away, you just can't do that. It really is good for me. It forces me to use a system where I'm not an integral part of that system. And if we go back to the goal, that's the goal. If I bought them locally, it wouldn't be any different than flipping. I'd be down there all the time. But if you can't go down there, then it forces you to run it in what I think is the right way using systems. Mike Wagner teaches us a three-prong system where basically we use Easy Storage Solutions, and they have a call center and a website that handles the renting, the answering of the phones, that handles all the tenant interaction. And then I have a local person that works for me in that town who we call that the boots on the ground, but that person is going to be my eyes and ears. They're going to clean units that need to be cleaned. They're going to see things that need to be fixed and find vendors to fix them. They're going to overlock people that need to be overlocked. And they're just going to, you know, I want them to own that place, be around and just monitor everything. And so they kind of take care of all the stuff. You know, they're really a facility caretaker. They don't really need to deal with tenants. They deal with the buildings and the fencing and all that kind of thing. And then the other tier is basically the office, which is bookkeeping, marketing, all that kind of thing. I basically run the marketing, but there's not a whole lot to do there. And then I have a bookkeeper, so I sub all that out to him. And I also have basically a VA, Rachel, and she does, she mails late letters, she sets up auctions, she does all the stuff I don't want to do work-wise. So my only really role is to communicate with these people, watch the marketing, and kind of just be around if anybody has a question. But the questions are relatively, I would say per facility, I might get 3 questions a week. I mean, that's hardly full-time work. I have 3 facilities now, so just not that bad. And most of the questions can wait. I just went away last week. I went away for 4 days kayaking up in the middle of nowhere in Kentucky, no cell service. And when I drove back, we had rented 5 units. Everything was fine. And there was a couple questions that weren't all that time sensitive or whatever. And so I was totally good to take those 4 days and do what I enjoy doing.
Yeah, that's pretty great when you are able to go out of town. Like you said, you'd had no cell service, you're in the middle of nowhere, and come back and 5 units are rented. And yeah, it's all done.
Oh, I know. You finally get cell service and you're like, look at that. Nice, you know. I'm addicted to the little emails that say a unit was rented. I like it. I saw it. It's just information. A unit was rented. There's no task for me.
Yeah.
Letting me know. That's addictive for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I've had this conversation with other investors, and it's just like you get an inordinate amount of like dopamine when that unit is rented, you know, for 60 or 80 bucks or 100 bucks or whatever it is. But that's kind of like you alluded to earlier with the systems, just like the great part of it. It is a business. Like it just kind of runs on itself. And unlike having a rental portfolio, you know, you don't need, you can plug and play your, for lack of a better word, employees better than you can if you have a problem with your property manager. Firing and hiring a property manager is kind of a big task, but, you know.
It is. And I think the reason it's so easy is because I don't have any climate control. I'm not afraid of it, but I don't currently have any. But what's going to break? You got a gate, you've got roll-up doors, and you got a roof that might leak. That's it. So the number of repairs is way lower. I mean, you think about it. Right now, I have 600 units, you know, 400-something tenants. And we go weeks, months with no repair requests. If you had 400 tenants in an apartment building or houses, you couldn't go a day without repair requests. So I think that's a big difference. The amount of things that can go wrong in a house or in an apartment are numerous. The amount of things that can go wrong at a self-storage facility are very low, and they're unlikely to go wrong. You know, the doors, we try to fix all the doors when we buy it. they do pretty well. We get very few door repairs. Most of the time I replace the gate system when I buy a facility just because I want the one I want and it'll be brand new, so it won't break. And, you know, fencing issues, there's just very little that's really, you know, had to pay somebody to trim some trees, or but there's just very, very few tenant requested repairs. That is a huge difference between this and anything that has to do with residential apartments, whatever.
Hey listeners, whether you're looking to get on the fast track to buying your first self-storage facility, expanding your storage empire, or connecting with top-level storage investors and operators, then join me and loads of other self-storage investors on a monthly interactive training by visiting www.storagerebeltrial.com. Here, you'll find an interactive group that hosts live monthly trainings in addition to an active daily forum that connects storage investors from around the globe and is hosted by our good friends at the Storage Rebellion. Mike Wagner and his team have generously offered our listeners a risk-free one-month trial, and you can check it out by visiting storagerebeltrial.com. Here, you'll have access to all the previous recordings and forums to check out all the solid content that has already been discussed, as well as the new content coming up. I'm on these calls every month, and there are lots of other new and experienced storage investors as well. So come join us risk-free at storagerebeltrial.com. See you there. Yeah, and Ken, you're talking about the overhaul of the properties, you know, kind of some of the minor and major repairs along with the systems you're implementing. You know, when you looked for these deals, what made them deals for you, I guess? Because there's, you know, there's a lot of different types of buyers out there. Some guys don't want to do anything. And you're doing more of a little bit of the heavy lifting. So, what is your criteria for the deals, and how are you finding them, and what makes a deal for Ken Holmes?
I don't use leverage. I don't borrow from banks. And so I tend to buy extreme value add. I mean, I have bought four facilities, and Tifton was about 40-something percent full. And that was the best one. Like I said, we had actually four paying customers out of 170 units at Meridian. I was about 20% full out of 240 units at Highway 49. Hinesville was about 26% full when I bought that. And so all of those were basically losing money. They weren't bringing in enough money to even pay the monthly nut. And so if you're buying with cash, I buy with all cash with investor money. And I'm splitting, you know, profits with my investors. And so those deals aren't really bankable very well. I mean, I'm not saying no bank will do it, but they're way less bankable. And so it cuts down on the number of people looking for them. Hopefully I can get a better price because of that. But I'm looking for the extreme value add. I mean, people say, what kind of NOI do you buy at? Mine's usually none. You know, what cap rate do you buy at? Well, what's the cap rate? Hinesville, I paid $400,000 for something that lost $500 a month. There's no cap rate on that. But I just could see the future. I mean, I knew that I could, I felt very confident I could get that to be worth about $900,000. And we would have, you know, $450,000 in it. So basically double the value. And so on the ones I'm buying, there's going to be little to no cash flow for a year, year and a half. And then the cash flow will slowly get better and better and better. But we're making a lot of juice on the value. And so my basic philosophy, you mentioned earlier, Terry, being a coach in life and there, we have a lot of people that want to make extreme change in their life and yet want to be debt-free. And so while I could have put money in this business, part of my goal was to prove that somebody could do this with none of their own money. Just to prove that fact. And so I have invested zero money in any of these facilities. I've basically been doing, you know, joint ventures with people that have money and are looking to invest. And so the value add deals are great for that. But basically, so my program is to do four value add deals, sell all those, 1030 with the money that I make into another deal that I either own free and clear or with very little debt that I keep long term. So it's like a two-phase thing. I'm going to create a bunch of wealth, and I'm going to 1031 it tax-free into things that I will own long term. So I'm really not trying to buy anything long term on the first round. They're all flips. But I could walk away with enough money to either pay for a facility or close enough.
Yeah. And you had mentioned you're buying these facilities with none of your own money. I mean, just to give people who are listening and watching us idea, like how much, because, you know, some facilities you see are 50 grand and some are 4 million. How much in total have you purchased the facilities you've, like, in total value out of them?
Hinesville was, and I'm going to give the all-in number. So this is the purchase price plus closing and repairs. So with Hinesville, it was 440. Tifton, it was 230. Tifton was only 12,000 square feet. Highway 49 was $880,000. And Meridian was 430. And basically, I believe that I will double the value of each of those or come close. I don't know if I'll quite double the one at 880, but I think we can get to, you know, upper 1.4 or 1.5 for sure. It's possible to double it. We'll have to see how it plays out. But that's a lot of wealth to be created. If you think that these are circa 3-year deals. Now, Tifton, we were in and out of it a year and a half, but that was, a smaller facility. It was already 45% full. We were full in 8 months. Hinesville is going to be a little over a 2-year deal. I've already got that under contract for over $1 million. And so if it's a 3-year deal and I create $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 in profit for me outside of cash flow, just the profit on the flip itself, that's pretty good living for finding a deal and working hard for 100 days and then putting it on autopilot. The hourly wage on that is pretty good. If you figure, I mean, you could, on the deals I'm doing, you could basically say, okay, I'm making 100 grand a deal a year. I mean, it's not exactly that. It's pretty close. So if I've got 3 or 4 of them going on, I'm doing pretty well. And that's not counting any of the cash flow. When you get to year 2 and 3, now I'm getting checks for rent as well as the growth and the value. So that's an hour, you know, people make more than that, but that's an hourly wage you can live with.
Yeah, I mean, you've basically, it looks like with the round numbers, taken about purchased $2 million worth of facilities and are going to turn it into $4 million. I'd say that's a pretty good.
Yeah, Terry, it was funny. I was down when I went to Meridian. It was Meridian, Mississippi in August, and it was hotter than hell. I mean, it was hot. And I was down there for 4 days, and I had my boots on the ground people. I had my contractors. Everybody was working. I was working. I mean, I sweat through my clothes, and it was 11 o'clock in the morning. And came back home, and I was talking to Gina on the phone. And she's like, you're killing yourself down there. I was like, well, yeah, but I'm basically making $100,000 a day because these are the 4 days I'm going to work. So I'm good with it. You know, I mean, it's going to take me a little while to get all that money, but that's it. That's the big push to me. The day you close, I want to go in. I want to have contractors lined up. I want to have hopefully interviewed and hired my boots on the ground person. I spend 4 days with them getting everything rolling and then come home. Not necessarily all the work is done, but it's started enough to where photos and video and stuff can show me how it's come along after that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty amazing. You know, I said it in the beginning, but just to hit on again, that a lot of these ones that you've had for a while, you haven't really been there since you bought them. And that is just, to me, incredible. And, you know, I've watched your journey and Mike Wagner's journey and Brent's journey through this, and it was kind of like I alluded to in the beginning, you know, was there a point you were like, hey, I got lucky on this one? And I think it's not until a lot of us go through that process that you're like, man, this is,
yeah,
if you do what you're supposed to do, this works exactly like it's supposed to.
Right. Just be conservative on the buy. You know, in my mind, the people that are taking risk in this business are using leverage. And I'm not against using leverage. I mean, I don't do it, but I'm not against it. It's not like a religious issue to me. but they're using leverage to make a deal that's okay at best look good. So they take a deal that if you paid cash, you'd wind up making, you know, 9% on your money. But because of leverage, it looks like 15%. See, I won't do that. If I was going to use leverage, I'd find a deal that was going to make 15% anyway and get it up to 25% with leverage. And so that the only people I worry about in this business are those that are stacking leverage like that on deals that aren't really killer deals. They're just kind of okay deals, but they just keep buying and buying and buying and stacking up more debt. Those are the only people I really worry about.
With all the success you've had in the last, I mean, seems like it's been a while, but I've watched you since the beginning and it's only been around 2 years. You know, that's a short amount of time to have that kind of success, at least for most people. You know, what kind of advice would you give to someone either looking to get their first facility or kind of, you know, that's thinking about getting a facility that might be taking the same journey that you've taken going from single family to storage?
Well, you have to learn what a good deal looks like. You know, I said, without Mike helping me, I wouldn't have known how to even start. And that's after a 25-year career in real estate, because it's not, like I said, it's not really real estate. It's a business. You know, if you wanted to buy a discount tire business, you have to learn how that business works. It's not the tire. How does the business work? It's the same thing. I had to learn how this business works without help from someone who already knew how it worked. I mean, it, you know, without Mike's coaching, I wouldn't have had the stones to go to people who know me and trust me and say, hey, you guys pony up $450,000 on this thing. I mean, I needed someone to help me analyze it, help me look at it, tell me it was going to be okay, tell me they thought the numbers were good, because it's just different. You know, my 25 years of real estate experience going into self-storage only helped this much. You know, I knew how to structure a deal with investors. That helped. I knew it wasn't my first rodeo in hiring four or five contractors to do the gravel work and the fence work, but that wasn't really that hard either. The knowledge from Mike is what I needed. How do you analyze this deal? How do you analyze the market? How do you analyze supply and demand? You know, why is this property not functioning well? And can it be fixed? You know, the same thing. Like I said, if you were buying a business and the business wasn't running well and you're thinking about buying it, well, why isn't it running well? Do you know why? Can this be, is this a market thing so it can't be fixed? Or is this a systems and marketing thing and it can be fixed? That's a whole different ball of wax. And so really, honestly, that's what's been cool about it for me. I've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of real estate deals. Learning the new part of this has been fun for me. You know, I have enjoyed the learning process and come to find out it's very lucrative and it allows me to be pretty lazy in my life, which is what I'm looking for.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome to kind of lean on your success a little bit to end up getting our first deal and working on some other deals. For you were talking about deals, what you're looking for. What have been some big things that reasons you've thrown out deals, whether you've just passed on them altogether or ones you might have had under contract and during due diligence walked away from?
Some areas have low rents, and that can be a supply and demand issue, or it can be a socioeconomic issue. But you know, I want my facilities to rent for at least 45, 50 cents a square foot, or there's just no, I would say no juice in it. I guess if you bought cheap enough, but in my mind, you need to be 45, 50 cents a square foot for it to be a good deal. And so I have turned down some that had a lot of things I liked about them, but the rents were low. And there's nothing I can do about that. We looked at one and the rents were low. And then I looked around at other facilities and everybody's low. And I'm just like, well, I can't fix that. There's no fixing that. And it's just got to be good enough. Again, doing them like I'm doing them with investor money, it needs to be a juicy deal. There's certainly deals where you could have a facility that would be 65% full, a tad below market, and somebody who was fine to go in and plop down a $150,000, $200,000 in down payment, get a SBA loan, 90% at 4-point-whatever interest rate, they could make that into a fine deal for them. But that's not my cup of tea. So I said, knowing what you want, I know what I want. My first four deals, I need to be able to flip them and walk away with a good bit of money. And so, because the goal is to 1031 that into the next one. So I know what I want. If I was on another plan, I'd be fine with that deal where I could put down $100,000 and borrow the money and move on. But that's not what I want. So it really goes back to kind of the life and air stuff where I have a vision. I have a plan. I'm implementing that plan. So any facility that doesn't fit in that plan, while it could be a good deal for someone else, it's not for me right now. When I come out of some of these, if I wind up with $500,000 coming out of Highway 49 and I can buy one that's 60% full, has a lot of upside on other stuff, I might do that. I might do that. So that's phase two. But for phase one, I'm sticking with the program I'm on.
Phase one's been pretty exciting to watch. And like I said, leaning on kind of your success and your faith around storage and watching what you go through has been a big inspiration for me. And I know a bunch of other people. Before we kind of wrap up, Ken, I'm curious, what you may be willing to share about maybe your biggest failure around storage, or maybe something else that, or something you wish you would have known before you started, that might be able to help some of the other people that are listening that might be struggling with some things.
I would say having an ample budget to do everything you want to do to the facility up front. You may not have to do it all up front, but I know of situations where people were like, well, we'll pay for this out of cash flow and that out of cash flow, and you wind up owning a facility for years, spending all your profit on upgrades. I was pretty tight on my first one in Hinesville, being able to get everything done for the amount of money I had allocated for that. And so what I learned was that if you're going to be in a facility for $500,000, an extra $20,000-$25,000 in repair money is almost meaningless. It's not going to make or break your deal. And so, coming from the house business, what do? We get three plumbers over there, try to get the cheapest one, and we're trying to save on every single thing. And to me, it's the exact opposite. Like, I'm going to run it remotely. I'm not going to be there. I want to hire somebody really good, licensed, insured, somebody who will back it up. And I'm willing to pay more for that expertise because I'm not going to be there. I don't want some jackleg in a truck trying to fix my stuff. I want a company. And so I pumped up my repair budgets a little bit to give me the luxury of dealing with first class people and getting the work done. So I think that's the, if anything, we all want to be in as cheap as we can be in. But on a deal like that, if you're going to take a facility from worth 500 to worth $1 million, $25,000 in repair money is not a big deal. So I'd be generous to yourself going in, I think. And get that money going in. Don't wait and fix things out of income later. It's just too long till you get to income on it. There's no income for long enough anyway without doing that. And I know people who have done that, and I know I was. If Hinesville hadn't gone three times better than I thought, I thought we'd move in 4 or 5 a month. We were moving in 13, 14. If it hadn't have done that, I would have not been as happy with my chintzy budget because I started making cash flow quicker than I anticipated. So there was a lot of luck in that one, but that's my big lesson is don't chintz on the budget. Have the money available to do what you need to do, do it right and get it handled, and then let the system go to work.
Yeah. I think that's good advice even for people not in storage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ken, I was a ton of good info. I appreciate it. And people have a deal that they want to sell or something that might fit your criteria. How would they get a hold of you? Any particular way or any particular social platform?
I'm on Facebook. I'll be the Ken Holmes that is in a blue kayak. They can reach out to me that way. That'd be fine.
Okay. And yeah, we'll probably put your info, if you're cool with it, in the show notes. If somebody down the road has, again, a deal or something, they can reach out to you.
I'm always here to talk to people, always looking to buy, always happy to help people. So that'd be fine.
Well, Ken, it was great having you on, man. We've got a couple questions. If you got a couple of minutes, we can kind of breeze through a few, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, let's see what we got.
So somebody had asked, let me see here, how you're marketing to find tenants for your units. Aaron Foster asked that.
Okay. Aaron, in my mind, storage is a war on Google. You have to win the war on Google. And so we do a variety of things, pay-per-click, spare foot, SEO. We do a variety of things so that, like at this point in Hinesville, if you were to be actually in Hinesville, Georgia, and Google self-storage, I'm going to be on page one of Google four times. Like you're going to have to work hard not to click on me somehow, some way. You know, Google My Business, getting that up there. I want to be one of the ones on the top of Google My Business. And so that's the war. It's all about Google. Winning that, you know, what would you do, Aaron, if you were looking for storage? You'd get on your phone, you'd get on your laptop, and you'd Google. That's the whole war. I don't really do anything that does not somehow relate to winning that war.
Yeah, that's as simple as it sounds. A lot of people don't do that. Somebody else asked about a case study, but like I said, I'd love to have you back down the road. Maybe we can dive in deeper to one of your deals. I think that'll be a show or two in and of itself, but with a lot of good info. Somebody else asked, how are you going about finding these deals?
Same thing you do to find house deals, basically. You're networking with people. We do some marketing direct to sellers, brokers, whatever. There's networking has been very good for me, but people do mailing campaigns, people do calling campaigns, just the same kind of thing that everybody does in real estate to look for deals. You can buy lists of storage owners, like same as you can buy a list of vacant properties or non-owner occupied or whatever.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, it's just like single family too, are always looking for that silver bullet when really it's just like picking a niche or two and doing the work.
Work in a numbers game. But that's the cool thing. I only want two deals a year. I really don't want any more than that. I work 3 months here, 3 months there, take the rest of the year on autopilot. Like, so that's, you don't have to do that much marketing to find two deals a year. And that's a lot of two deals a year. I said, if you're going to wind up making $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 per deal in the long run, whether you're flipping them or whatever, there's people who want to be richer than me, but that's ample for me.
Yeah. Let me see here. And somebody asked about, well, we already covered that, how to acquire your first facility, but they were asking about how to find investors that you work with the deal structure that you do.
I've been using investors for probably a dozen years. So I kind of already had investors. Getting investors it's not that hard to do, but you don't snap your fingers and get them overnight. I basically, for years, would go to the normal places that I would go to. I might go to church. I might go to a football game. I might go to a cocktail party. I might go to wherever I go. And people say, hey, what's going on in real estate? And I would say, oh, that's great. We're finding a bunch of deals. Me and my investors are doing really well. And then I would say, did you see that hit last night? Did you watch the World Series? Or what? I just changed the subject. So I just continually talk about these investors until people would eventually reach out to me and say, hey, what's the deal with these investors? How do I get in on that? You know, and I would say, well, yeah, I don't know. It's complicated. It might not be for you. And I just make them chase me. And the ones that kept chasing me, eventually I would talk to them about it and see if we were a good fit. But I don't go ask people for money. I think that's the, just think about it, Ben. If somebody comes and says, hey, let me take you to lunch, I have an opportunity. I mean, the first thing you're going to do is hide your wallet. You know, they're going to try to Amway sell you something or whatever. I take the exact opposite tack. I just out and about in the world, And I say real estate is great, and me and my investors are very happy with it and let people come to me. So that's a good way to get investors, a slow way, but it's a good way. But I do not ask people for money. I think that's a bad way.
Yeah, and you're really good at getting money. I mean, you funded, I think, your last couple of deals pretty damn quick.
I'm fortunate and resting on my laurels of the first 12 years of doing it. You know, I've had some people invest money with me that they don't understand anything about storage. They never look at the facility, so they couldn't even vet the deal if they wanted to. So they're basically investing in me. And that sounds cool, but that is also, if you actually know and like these people, that's it tightens up your game. I'm not going to take a flyer on some half-assed deal when I've got a bunch of people that I know that I like putting up real money. I can't do that. No. So it tightens me up. Using investor money, switching from banks to investors has been a good thing for my business, not because any kind of rate of return, but because I just don't take chances. I don't lose any money anymore. Every deal has to be good because every deal has to pay the investor. You know, the bank doesn't, when I had a credit line for, you know, $1.2 million and I'm buying houses all over the place, I could lose money on the house and the bank would never know. I made my payments, but I can't do that on deals where investors are getting paid just from that deal. I have to make sure that every deal is good. And on the whole, that's been good for me. Slow my wild butt down a little bit and concentrate on just a few good deals rather than a ton of deals and see which ones are better and worse. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. Well, cool, Ken. A bunch of people chimed in here saying they appreciate all the info and just a bunch of people very grateful. And I as well am grateful for you taking some time to really dive into this stuff. I know I get a ton of value out of it, and I'm sure a lot of other people have, man. So I just want to say thanks. And
no problem, man. I love to talk storage, and my wife is sick of it. So any outlet will work.
Yeah, and if anybody listening or that watch has a deal that Ken might be interested in, or you know, could maybe somebody down the road interested in investing with him, make sure you definitely reach out to him. Ken's a great operator. We're invested in one of his deals and couldn't be happier about it. So thanks again, Ken. It was great having you, man. I appreciate it.
No problem, Terry. Appreciate you having me on.
Hey, everyone. I wanted to thank you for listening to this episode of the Self Storage Playbook Podcast. We'd love to know your biggest takeaways from the show today, and we'd love to hear from you at selfstorageplaybook@gmail.com. You can also find out more info on today's guest, the nuts and bolts of self-storage, and connect with other self-storage investors in our growing community at selfstorageplaybook.com and through searching our group on Facebook at Self Storage Playbook. And don't forget to go to www.storagerebeltrial.com for your risk-free one-month trial to the Storage Rebellion University monthly calls. I'll see you there.